Hello and welcome to On in 5. Thank you for joining us. My name is Anton Ryder. We've got a very special, fun episode for you tonight here on the non-news episode. Of course, I'm joined by my friends Ethan Bonin and Austin Thomas. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Austin.
Hi, Ethan.
How's it going?
You guys is... Your guys' hellos get more sarcastic every time. It's really bringing me down. Really wears me down.
It's just it's the evolution of who we are as people, man. It's going to get worse.
Oh, God. That is great. Well, speaking of evolution,
only a year in.
What a beautiful segue. We have a evolution. we've got the evolution of one of the most famous instruments of all time and the instruments that surround it, and of course the guitar player that surrounds that instrument. We're talking about Eddie Van Halen and his famous guitars, and of course the most famous of those guitars, the Frankenstrat. It's gonna be a good episode tonight. So just up top, I want to give a quick little input that we are actually doing a video episode for this episode. We're still going to one take it, but if you subscribe to our Patreon, you can see the video episode and you can see us speaking. And then I also put slides up with all of the guitars as we talk about them and all the details and stuff like that. So it's just a nice little extra way to get a look at probably one of the most visual episodes we've ever done. So we're pretty excited to do that. Try it out. So let's get into it.
And we know how bad you guys wanted to watch us record an episode.
Yeah.
Oh, well, really, yeah.
High demand for that.
The emails were daunting.
Not to get too off track. When I get on Omegle and people see my setup and then they're like, "Oh, are you a streamer?" I'm like, "No, I do a podcast." And they're like, "Oh, so it's like, are you like live on YouTube?" I'm like,
"No."
So now it can be like, if you go to our Patreon, you can see me do it exactly one time, and then probably never again. It probably won't go too well. That's all right.
We'll see how it goes. How many more people subscribe to our Patreon after this.
Oh man, the expectations are low. So it's not too often that we have an instrument that is as famous or even more famous than the person that plays it, but this is one of those rare occurrences.
This instrument has a 45-minute video on YouTube about just the guitar. I watched it. Very educational, and I'd like to thank Johnny B Guitars who made it. Mm-hmm. He's got like 6,000 subscribers on YouTube. Definitely seems super knowledgeable at face value. And you know what I learned from that video? David Lee Roth claimed he designed the Frankenstrat, and it seems like total bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm going to need some sources on that because I've never heard that claim and I could not find anything about it, but it's 100% believable that he would say that.
He
even said that he wrote the guitar solos like with his mouth. I swear to God.
Yeah, it was in an interview. Johnny B Good or Johnny B Guitars. I watched the videos too.
Johnny B Good.
But he said that. Yeah, basically, David said that he designed everything, and I don't know if he said that he designed the design on the guitar or if he just told Eddie to do something fun with his guitar. But regardless, it doesn't really matter. Eddie was the one who did it, and Eddie is the one who made it world famous because David.
Dude, you know what you should do? You should like have a guitar that's like really good. I came up with the idea for the Frankenstrat.
Like that, yeah. You should paint it, man. My idea.
You should paint on your guitar, man.
Oh man, yeah, it's. You know, whatever. Yeah,
love him or hate him.
We would be remiss if we didn't talk about Eddie Van Halen's famous Frankenstrat, as well as the other guitars that he came up with, because it's a little less known that he came up with more guitars and built more guitars than just the Frankenstrat.
Yep. Some people like to call it Frankie, and I think I can hopefully confidently say none of us are those people.
Nope. I hit it with the hard Frank.
Yeah, yeah, I saw it.
It's the Frank.
I saw it. I saw it in there.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe.
You're treading there.
It's good. It's a fascinating little side story that we've got going on. We didn't have enough time to do it in our main episodes, but it's like, it's too little to like do an episode on its own. So we're just going to talk about it for like an hour here, and we're really excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
It does sound like a really good idea.
God. If you can't tell, this series could have easily been another five-parter as well. Like, it, there's so much information that we had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We got it fairly condensed, I think, and it only required our outlines to be almost 10 pages longer than usual.
Yeah, about double the length, which is
probably
amazing.
Could have afforded
that
another.
Oh, yeah, we could have done a four-parter. We want to wrap this up by the end of the year. So, yeah. So it's fine. As a forewarning to this episode, I will be using some very specific guitar terminology for the parts used on the guitars themselves. But I'll try and explain it the best I can for people who don't necessarily know what I'm talking about. And truthfully, I'm not a guitar player myself, so I just had to do the research and kind of understand. So Ethan can be the one who kind of tells me if I'm way off on things. And I expect him to, because we want to give you the right story. So,
as long as he's reading along.
Right. Yeah, so we're going to be focusing on Eddie's most famous guitar, but we're also going to give a brief rundown on some other guitars that he played.
Well, Tony will tell us about it, and me and Austin are throwing commentary. It'll be fine.
Yeah, we pull our weight around here at all times. This is not a subject that is my forte, though. So
hey, listen, we're just here for some fun. All right, for some fun. All right,
got it. I'm glad to be here, buddy.
Let's get into it. To look at the history of the instrument, we have to go back to 1973. Eddie had a Gibson guitar that his parents bought him. Some people said that it was the SE-335, something like that. And then he also had a Les Paul at one point, apparently. But Eddie wanted to build a guitar that fit him specifically.
Yeah, like we said in part one, if he didn't have something he wanted or he needed, he just built it. Like, mm-hmm. He just made it happen no matter what the case.
It's awesome. Yeah, he loved the sound of his Gibson guitar, but he really liked the look of the Fender Stratocaster, as well as the fact that it had a tremolo bar, or as it's more commonly known, a whammy bar.
You can't hit dive bombs without a whammy. I learned that really young. That's why I bought a Yamaha Pacifica specifically for my first guitar. I needed to hit whammies.
Your first guitar, you were like, all right, I just know that I need to just crank these strings out.
I was like, I want to like really stretch them out fast.
I respect it, man. Yeah, those dive bombs, they'll get anyone going. They're awesome.
Do something to me.
Yeah, so this guitar would help make his playing even more unique, and it would help him with those deep dive bombs we were just speaking about.
You take tension off the strings, let them go real low, and then you hit like a harmonic, and then you just make it scream on the way up. It's so tight.
Yeah, if you don't know what a dive bomb is, you can look up gnarly in Webster's dictionary. There'll be a brief that little description there for you.
Yeah. I think if you go to hell yeah, bro, it's also a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's also gnarly. Next to that too. It's a footnote.
It's so good. So Eddie was still broke at the time, as this was very early in their career and they were just playing house shows or whatever they could find. So he decided he was going to go to Boogie Bodies Guitars, a guitar building company started by Lynn Ellsworth and Wayne Charvel.
It actually got bought by Speedster Amplifiers in 1995, which is a pretty big deal because Michael Soldano designed amps for them, and he's a huge name in amplifiers. He made a lot of big names amps.
Never heard of him. But Wayne Charvel starts Charvel, or plays a big part in it at the very least, which will come up later in the story.
God, I can't wait for all the people that get to watch the Zoom and just see Ethan's face frozen in one frame. It'll change every couple minutes.
Ethan's frame rate right now is like, is one frame every 15 seconds. And it's great. Yeah, Ethan has very terrible internet. We've been over this. It doesn't matter. All the more fun watching the video. Thanks for subscribing to our Patreon video watchers.
Thank you so much.
So, seeing as how he did not have a lot of money, he ended up buying a factory reject body that had a large knot in the wood for $50. And then he bought a neck from them for $80, putting his investment at a whopping $130.
I really wanted to see what the knot in the body looked like, because I was imagining like this cool, big, gnarled piece. And yeah. I couldn't find anything until I happened to stumble upon a YouTube video also from Johnny B Guitars.
Dude, this dude and he does so many videos just on this guitar.
He's obsessed with it. he's obsessed with it, but like Ethan said, he knows a lot. He's very thorough, and I'm thinking this man has seen some things. You can tell in his eyes. I don't want to, as Ethan pointed out earlier, I don't want to, you know, judge anyone from what they've done in their past. I'm just going to say he looks like a groovy guy. Hell yeah. So I'm going to take everything he says. Sadly, though, that knot is just like two little indents on the lower horn of the body. It's not what I thought.
Yeah, it's very small. But apparently they were pretty detrimental to the body because Johnny B himself said that it was a really low class reject. Like it was a way bottom of the barrel reject.
And just burn it. Yeah, throw it out in the bin.
But they just said, well, maybe we could sell it for $50 and then maybe later it could sell for like $100,000.
Maybe we, guys, what if we sell it cheap and we maybe just accidentally sell it to the most famous guitarist in the world?
Oh my God. Like that
becomes
could happen.
That. Right?
That
right?
could happen. Yeah. Wow. It's not like Boogie Body's got like a percentage of the makings of this guitar. Like it's a flat rate.
No.
Well, all the same, good return on investment for Eddie. So he didn't care what body he got, but he made sure to get a neck that had these wide frets like his Gibson guitar had, because he really liked the playing style of those wide frets. So he took the pieces home and then he put them together.
That's insane that he's literally scrounging for scrap parts to make his guitar.
Just give me what you got.
He's putting this thing together like some kind of Frankenstein monster.
It's knock it off. Knock it off. Are you kidding me? You're a genius.
I'm here to bring the jokes.
So when he got home, he took apart his Gibson and Strat guitars that he owned and then took the Gibson's humbucking pickups, which are essentially plates that go underneath the strings and pick up the vibrations of the strings and then convert them to an electrical signal and then amplify them.
It's piezo electricity. We literally would not be doing this show without it. What an incredible thing, but we're not going to get into that yet. We will save that when we do the history of audio recording,
which we are going to do.
Yeah, we would someday. But after recording these last two episodes, like, I'm a little worried that we're going to have to start treating the topic of electricity like conspiracy theory, because it's becoming very triggering for you.
It is.
It is just like, he is just speaking factually, but it just comes off like he's saying something a little scandalous.
It's just so relevant to my life right now. I get really excited about it.
Oh, you are buried in electronics.
Oh, man. Bless you for it.
Bless you.
Yeah, so the pickups are basically the part that make an electric guitar an electric guitar. So anyway, he took a set of two of these out of the Gibson, as they had two sets, and then dunked them in a coffee can full of melted Mr. Zog's Sex Wax, which was a brand of surf wax at the time, not what you would think by the name. And then he said that this actually helped control feedback when he was playing, so that it would kind of kill the vibrations that would make the feedback be a problem, which was an issue because if you remember, he always had his amp turned all the way up.
Hey, you know what I'm wearing right now?
What?
It's a shirt. And this is only going to be for certain people.
Okay.
Mr. Zog's Sex Wax shirt. Really... I'm no wearing way. It right now.
No yeah. way.
Yeah.
No
that's
way.
Literally what I'm wearing right now.
Get close to the camera. We gotta see that. We gotta see that one.
All right, let me turn around. Let me turn around so we can get the back of my shirt, because it's a huge logo on the back. Swear to God.
Please subscribe to our Patreon so you can see this, everyone. My God, it is.
What is
that? Is incredible.
So
you own a surf wax shirt.
He literally coated them so they wouldn't pick up sound as easily. Pretty smart guy, despite not knowing that women cannot get pregnant from blowjobs.
Yeah, he's clever. We've all thought it at one time, one or another. He also claimed that he created this technique, but I guess Fender had been doing it on certain models since like the 50s. So it wasn't a common practice at the time, but it definitely had been done.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he probably just figured it out on his own, you know, parallel thinking, whatever, all that.
He claimed to invent a number of things that had been around, but he definitely threw them into mainstream, but I think he's just stoned. Well, he probably forgot.
Most people don't talk about the guitars they build. That's the thing. Like, most people aren't world-famous guitarists, and Fender's not going to be like, yeah, we definitely do this thing, and most people aren't going to have a platform like Eddie Van Halen did to talk about how we built this guitar, so...
I'm going to need you to stop, like, thinking logically and, like,
thinking in depth about things.
I had an idea for, like, portable paper a couple years ago. iPad. You kidding me?
Oh.
You kidding me?
Man.
I had it way before they came out with it. Apple stole my idea. Bullshit.
It's like the unicorn, man.
Bullshit. Oh, man. Anyway, okay. So, the guitar.
Is that an Office reference?
Yes, it was. It was an Office reference.
Oh. That was so loose that I'm mad I got it.
Okay, let's get back to the episode, boys.
Yeah, we don't need to go into that any further.
So, he had a Fender bridge from his Fender guitar, which is the piece that holds the strings to the body of the guitar and actually raises them above the fretboard and stuff like that, so it actually can levitate and vibrate and do everything that it needs to. And then he put that on the guitar and then added the Gibson pickups, which he had to put in at a slight angle to actually compensate for the slight distance variance between the bridge and the pickups. So, like, you know, he didn't know much about electrical engineering, but he really just loved tinkering with equipment and seeing exactly what worked.
Honestly, I bet if he wanted to learn, like, electrical theory, he could have done it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he could have done most things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like, at least.
Yeah. Even it's like you doing the airplane school now that you've already been in the Air Force, where you just know it from on the fly training.
Yeah.
It's great.
Just doing
right.
it.
Yeah.
Just having people's lives in your hands.
That's why you just
got to adapt.
Yeah. That's why you just drink pots of coffee during class and then snap out all your classmates are sleeping. Those are aircraft mechanics
Those
trying
are
to
the
learn.
People taking care of your avionics.
It's great. It's awesome.
Sleep the whole class.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. We're just throwing everything under the bus. I love it. Yeah. All right, so once he had everything in, he put the rest of the guitar together, adding the mic plug and then a single dial, which just controlled the volume of the guitar, which would aid in an effect that Eddie would use when he played. He played it on Cathedrals, where he would play the solo just by turning the volume up and down, and that's how he played the solo. It's very cool. It doesn't really matter to this episode, but it's, again, a cool thing that he did.
It is very cool, and I also wrote it in the outline to say that, and I don't have to now, so...
Sorry about that.
That's perfect.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I'm just letting you know, I had the same wavelength.
That's
I wanted to tell the people.
Such an effing cool thing he does.
It's funny, they just use a pedal for that now.
Fucking know.
Yeah, now they do. Yeah,
that's true.
Yep. Not back in that the late 70s. So the body was meant to have three dials on it, one for the volume, and then two for tone, but he ditched the other two dials, likely because he didn't know how to wire them, and he just went for the single dial.
This is where that lack of theory stuff comes in, but it doesn't matter because he made up for it in talent and innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It also kind of helped with his signature tone in an inadvertent way, because you can't mess with any tone switches. You only have volume available, so you have to already have that figured out.
Yeah. 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 That's a great thing. Great point. So once the whole guitar was put together, then he painted the entire body black.
Some people think that it might have been because his love for Eric Clapton, who notably had Blackie, which was a black Strat.
That's a pretty fair guess, pretty confident guess. A lot of people said that it was to hide buffs and imperfections as well, and just because black looks good.
Yeah, I was gonna say it could also just be because it looks badass.
Yeah, dude. Oh, yeah, dude. So then he took a roll of gaff tape and then wrapped the guitar randomly, just kind of doing it as he wanted to, and then he painted the entire body white. And when it was dry, he removed the tape, and thus the first variation of the Frankenstrat was born.
It's insane how such a simple paint job can literally be associated with one specific man. The black and white version itself looks like it could be part of a much larger painting if you're, like, looking at it and try to, like, think of it out of context, like, with more around it. It looks really cool.
Yeah. the black and white Frankenstrat definitely looks more put together than the next variation. And I want to point out, actually, I'll point it out in a little bit. He then added a white pit guard from his Stratocaster before ending it, before then putting on a full-size black pit guard. And then he played this Frankenstrat V1 for a couple years, and he used it on the band's debut album. And I think now is as good a time to mention that as any that his famous Frankenstrat is not a Strat at all. The only Fender part that's on there is the bridge, which he later swaps out. And I believe the dial on the thing is as well. It's for volume, but it says tone. It's got the tone written on it, not volume. But I think that's from his Strat as well. But
I love that. Why use the volume?
Yeah, well,
it's got to be. You got to make it as obscure as you can.
Because it's badass, brother.
yeah.
But the entire body is not a Stratocaster, so it's funny that that he mentions it. So just a little background here. When Clarence Fender made the guitar, Clarence Fender being the founder of Fender Guitars, the only things that he patented was the bridge and the tremolo bar. He patented the pickups, the bolt that held the body and neck together, and then he patented a cutout on the body of the guitar on the bottom to easily rest your arm on the guitar, and then he made a cutout on the backside of it to rest your stomach when you were playing, when you were sitting down. And so if you look at most of the any other body style, it doesn't have those two cutouts, but anyone's allowed to use the kind of classic Stratocaster body style, which is why he got away with it.
Lack of foresight.
Yeah, he never patented like the most iconic thing about it, but
yep.
That's all right.
That's a real lack of foresight, but also like calling it the Frankenstrat feels a little wrong now, but
yeah, well, it'll,
the more you know.
It'll come around, you'll see. So after he played this Frankenstrat for quite a while, he then decided to hang it up, and then he made his second guitar, which is called the Danelectro Charvel Star. It had a Charvel style, it had a Charvel body and a Danelectro neck. The body had a unique look, looking like a flying V, but with one of the tips of the V up and then two more legs coming off of it. It just basically looked like a very odd star, hence the name. Go check out our Patreon. You can see it right now.
It's on the screen. Think Flying V and Gibson Explorer had a love child.
That is a wonderful way to put that. On the guitar, he used the Telecaster pickups, and then he added a Floyd Rose locking bridge and tremolo bar, and then a locking nut up at the top of the neck, which essentially helps the guitar stay in tune when using that whammy bar and doing your deep dives.
My second guitar was a Dinky Jackson, which had a Floyd Rose locking trem on it as well. They're awesome if you're a guitarist who plays for a living. They are not awesome when you're 16 years old, just learning guitar, and doesn't know a damn thing about a locking trem.
I remember a few expletive-filled occasions of you trying to change the strings on that guitar.
Yeah, my dad, who is a obviously we've talked about my dad. He said that he has a Floyd Rose bridge and locking nut. And he said that they are a pain in the ass to tune and a pain in the ass to change the strings on it. So, but it really helps to do those deep bombs. So I guess it's kind of worth it in the end.
It's a love-hate relationship and a give-take kind of situation.
That's...
You do what you have to do.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So before this, yeah, guitars would go out of tune when they were using the bar. And honestly, the whammy bar was never used very often before Eddie kind of took it over or kind of made it famous. It was basically just to do warbles, but then he started doing the deep dives and kind of, you know, but it, even when you were just doing little things with it, it would still push it out of tune. And so now that it was becoming more popular, the strings were getting really stretched and condensed when you would use it. And so they made this locking nut and this locking bridge. And so now Eddie could push his dive bombs even further.
The locking system features normal tuning pegs, but has fine tuning pegs at the tremolo itself to deal to dial in your strings more. It's a fine tuning. And it also features Allen screw locks on the nut, which is the dividing part, which holds your strings even longer. It's really cool.
freaking locks them in place. It's awesome.
Never moves.
Yep.
Hold them there.
So after he was done doing all this, he painted the guitar white before later changing the body style to match the Frankenstrat V1 with the white with black stripes and things like that. And there's a little bit more designs in this one. There's a skull and there's a kind of looks like a bomb in there. But just, you know, he's already kind of ramping up how he wants it to all look and getting more creative as he goes on, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And while he built the guitar in 1978, around this time that they were recording, he wouldn't use it for a couple more years, not really breaking it out until the World Invasion Tour in 1980.
God, I just wish I could have been born in a different time where you could like see the evolution of all these guitars and watch them break them out, debut them live.
Yeah, but then at the exact same time, you probably wouldn't see it because you don't ever see these guys play because there's no internet. So it'll be way harder to see them.
Oh, I meant go there. Obviously, I'd follow him on tour.
Yeah, you'd go see him every night across the country.
One of those people. Yeah.
See, that makes sense. If Austin would have been born in the 60s, he would have been a groupie is the thing. So he would have been there.
I would have been born in a different time. So obviously under different circumstances, I'm sure I would have been a trust fund baby.
You would have been loaded.
Yeah.
Just born in the wrong generation, man.
That's where my problem came from.
Okay. So after he was done with the Star, he moved on to his third guitar, which was the Bumblebee. He built this guitar in 1979, and it was sort of a return to form for Eddie. It once again had the Boogie Bodies body, but now it was under the label Charvel. But now that Eddie was a big name, being on his debut tour, he asked the company if they could try something. He had them move all the routing for the electronics to the back of the guitar so he could route it all through the back, which would eliminate the need for a pick guard and hide the wires and holes. So if you look up a picture of it, or if you're watching us, you can see that there's no pick guard and it is a completely smooth front, which is very cool. And then he wired it up using a homemade pickup, mixing a DiMarzio humbucker with a magnet from a Gibson pickup. And then he again dipped it in wax, as was his signature, and then put it all together.
He also claimed to have created this technique, but I guess Fender had been doing it on certain models since the 50s. Like, it wasn't a common practice at the time, but he definitely had been done.
Wait a second.
You feel a little deja vu?
Did you put that in twice on purpose? What's going on?
Oops.
Wait a second. No. I'm good.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just trying to give you some insight into his technique.
Austin was just
paying
attention.
Stay awake, people. Stay awake.
That is great. All right, so yeah, he used a Charvel neck, which was painted black, and then he painted the entire body yellow, and then masked it up again, and then painted it over top black, which gives it the iconic Bumblebee look, hence the name. He played the guitar while in the studio for Van Halen 2 and then through their second tour, but he retired it when he decided he wanted to go back to basics. And just as a fun side note, Eddie buried the Bumblebee with Pantera guitarist Dimebag Darrell after he was shot and killed on stage in 2004.
Damn you, damage plan. Damn it. Damn you.
Yeah, what a wild story, man. That's a wild freaking story. We'll get into it at some point, but yeah. Apparently, Darrell met with Eddie and offered to pay $30,000 for one of his guitars, but Eddie said that he would instead custom build one for Dave, and Dave said that his favorite paint job was the Bumblebee, so he wanted it in that style. And then just a couple weeks later, after they met, Dave was killed. So Eddie showed up to the funeral with the original Bumblebee and then put it in Dave's casket and said an original should have an original.
And Dimebag was clearly super influenced by Eddie. That dude loved Dive Bomb. So rest in peace.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you throw the rips around pretty willy-nilly, but I got a rip with you.
Hey, man, I'll make that a perfect 3-for-3. R.I.P., my friend. All right,
cheers. Todd.
So in 1979, Eddie hung up the Bumblebee, and then he brought back his Frankenstrat V1. Though it was still Black and White at the time. It was gaining some real popularity as the band was doing the same, and companies were beginning to make knockoffs of the instrument.
There are some people that even think Eddie stole the idea from a punk band called The Dills, but mm-hmm. they existed in such a close time frame that the allegations go either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. They started in 76, and they only made it to like 80, I think. And they were also based in California, so it was super hand in hand. Yeah, I think the allegations were only about the paint job, though, right?
Yeah. That he striped his guitar. Yeah. Up. Yeah.
I was looking at up pictures, and they are definitely pretty similar. And I tried to look really deep into who had it first or second or whatever, and I came to the conclusion, who fucking cares?
That's the greatest conclusion you can come to. Because, yeah, it doesn't really matter at all.
It really doesn't matter because the other ones are not Eddie Van Halen. Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, though, the Dills actually painted their guitar, and that was a Gibson Les Paul, so, like, it's not even a little bit the same, you know?
It's not even, like, the same plane.
Freaking apples and oranges, dude. Apples and freaking oranges.
She like they apples did. Have oranges. A song called I Hate the Rich. It's very funny.
Well, that's just
punks. they're punk boys.
Yeah, the Dills in the 60s and then the Good Charlotte in the 2000s doing the Lifestyles of Rich and the Famous. That's right. The more we change, the more we stay the same.
Yeah, I did also learn from my research that the Dills are the band in Cheech and Chong Up in Smoke in the Battle of the Bands.
Huh. That's actually a good one. So. Good little, that's fun little side point. Okay, let's get back into the episode. So Eddie was not a fan of the fact that companies were using the Frankenstrat paint style, so he wanted to change the look and kill any chances of the Frankenstrat as it was known now of coming back. So he took the whole thing apart, and then he put more tape over it. And then he took some red Schwinn bicycle paint and painted over it. When he removed the tape, it showed a red guitar with white and black peeking through underneath. And thus you had the Frankenstrat V2. God. He altered the hardware slightly as well. At first, he added the neck from the Bumblebee, and the earliest versions of this show this with the black head.
That looks so incredibly slick with that black headstock.
It's like not too common to see photos of the Frankenstrat with the black head. So that's like
they're few and far between.
Yeah, it's pretty rare. And so if you see it with the black head, that's how you know that it's the earliest version of it. He only used this neck for a short time before swapping it out for different heads, and then eventually he went back to the very first neck that he used, the one that he bought for $80 in the early 2000s. And then he added some bicycle reflectors to the back so that he could flip it over, and then he could hit the crowd with the reflected stage lights.
I was trying to find videos of this, of him actually doing this, because I wanted to see how well it worked. And while I didn't find any, I stumbled across a message board where someone asked, why he would do this because, and this is a quote, they couldn't think of any reason why anyone would ever do this other than to see what great lengths EVH nerds would go to copy his guitar. And the message board is 11 pages of comments all saying, rumor is he found them at a truck stop and thought they would reflect stage lights in a cool way. Or he found them at a truck stop and thought they would reflect light in a cool way. Or cool way to reflect light from stage when found. It's 11 pages of variations on that sentence.
So good.
I was just dying. There's really.
Be a group of friends.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing Someone better than when that. Freaking forums where everyone says the exact same thing and they like act like it's the most original idea. Like, give me a freaking break.
I was like trying to look it up later. I was like, this has to be some kind of running joke.
It's just everyone thinking.
But that was the only place I found it.
Yeah, it's just those guys thinking they're original. It's great.
Oh, God, it gave me a titter.
So after a year of playing it, playing this style, he changed the hardware up again, swapping out the Fender tremolo bar for the Floyd Rose tremolo that he had used on the Charvel Star. And then he added the locking nut up top on top of the neck again so that he could do his big, deep dive bomb.
Oh, boy, now he's repping that Floyd Rose.
Yeah, you said it, buddy.
Hell yeah.
You said it.
Yeah. All right.
You gotta pay extra to get our group shit out to know all these little things making ourselves laugh.
Yeah, these are all inside jokes. It's really great. It's awesome for a public facing product.
Hey, it still translates. It still translates. You just don't get to know.
All right. All right.
It's not even interesting.
No, it's not a good joke. So he loved his tremolo bar loose to the point where he'd actually unscrew it, and then he would super glue a nut onto it to actually hold it to the guitar. But then when he wasn't using it, it would hang straight down, and then it would rotate freely.
Actually, pretty genius. Those nuts tend to like work themselves off when you keep using the whammy. So if you do like glue it right at the end, like you said, you get a nice loose whammy. You don't have to deal with a fixed whammy, and no one wants to be tight. You gotta hang loose, baby.
That's what he's all about, baby. That's what he's all about. Actually, if you look at pants of him around the time, he's anything but loose.
I was gonna say this. He had a straight up camel toe like two pictures ago.
I think it's actually a
moose knuckle.
Moose knuckle, yeah. It's moose knuckle on boys. same, stay but different, educated. But same, yeah.
Stay educated.
He was having some issues with the Floyd Rose bridges that he was having installed, or that he was installing himself, which seemed to like kick him out of tune whenever he would play. So his solution was to screw a 1971 quarter onto the guitar itself right next to the bridge, which essentially helped hold it in place and ensured the guitar would not go out of tune.
I literally had to get mine modified in a similar fashion because the B string wouldn't hold in tune. I do not know what was used to hold mine in place, but actually a pretty common issue in Floyd Rose's.
Well, Eddie fixed it the old-fashioned way by putting an old quarter in there.
God, that's cool.
And if you're on our Patreon and you're watching the video right now, you can see the quarter and the reflectors there on the back of the guitar. Just a fun little thing there. The problem was actually fixed in a newer model of the bridge, or at least it was sort of fixed. But Eddie then decided to keep the guitar on there just because he wanted to. He kind of rotated it out of place and then just screwed it in so that it would stay in place. But it was just kind of a thing at that point.
I mean, this guitar really is just as much of a showcase just for his eccentricity as it is an ingenious invention to perfect his sound.
Oh yeah, it's function meets fashion at this, like,
yep,
it's completely functional first, and then it just looks cool in the end because it's so functional. Yep.
It's more and more wild, but still incredibly functional.
Yeah. So when he first built the guitar and it had that black headstock, if you actually look at photos of the black headstock, which I will go back to right here, you can actually see that the pickguard used on it is very small and very weird shaped. That's because the original pickguard on the Strat was a vinyl record that he cut out into the shape of a pickguard. That's the only thing he could find at the time. And so when you see photos of the black guitar, or the black head on the guitar, that is that's a vinyl record. But he removed that, and then he put on another pickup into the top slot of the body, but later admitted that it wasn't wired into anything, and it was just there to basically confuse people who were trying to copy him.
What a little trickster. Hiding his solos.
So smart.
Yep. Smart guy.
Yeah, man.
Very smart.
He's a regular Jimmy Page. He had a third pickup that was in the middle slot for a short while. And again, if you look at that photo with the black head, you can actually see a third pickup in there in some of the photos. But then he took that out, and then he put in some random wires and then a functionless three-way switch glued sideways.
Sneaky, sneaky, sir.
It's so weird. Yeah,
if you sneaky, sir.
It's so funny. If you look at it, it is so wild the way that it looks. But he then took off.
Well, thanks, Ethan.
Got it.
he then took off the black pickguard, the vinyl one, and then he put on just a small little, basically cut down version of the Strat pickguard that he had on his original guitar. He cut it down to basically only cover the hole in the wood that was for the three dials. And it just, obviously, it still just had the one dial on it. And then he screwed two screw eyes to where the strap buttons would be to ensure that the strap could never fall off. I think he actually did this on the original iteration of the guitar, but he did it all the same. And then lastly, every night before he played, he would take a piece of masking tape about 6 inches long, and then he would roll it like a burrito, and he would stick it to the guitar just above where the pick guard was, and then he would tape 5 or 6 picks to that tape, and that's where he would get his picks for every show.
You know, technology has come a long way. Those microphone stand pick holders are so nice.
Yeah, but this is way more badass. Way you can watch videos of him do an eruption and you just do it a little bit, flick a pick in the crowd, probably cause a quick murder, and then go right back to shredding.
He like uses them like a throwing star.
No. People are fighting for him, dude.
No, yeah, that's what I meant. I meant fighting for him. Oh. I didn't mean he's killing someone with this thing.
Like assassinating the audience.
Right in the eye.
That'd be badass. That would honestly be badass.
That would be way cooler than what I said. Right?
I didn't even mention this, but he also, like, every show, he would change out his strings. But before he would change out his strings, he would boil them to basically, like, stretch them out before he even put them on his guitar. So they were, like, more ready to go before they even got on the guitar. Just made shit up, and it was all perfect. It's awesome. But, you know, with all that stuff, the Frankenstrat V2. Was officially born, and this is the most famous iteration of it, and he had no idea what he was doing when he built it, but it was like just too big. It was built to help him play as a guitarist, and that's the only thing that he cared about. He liked the paint job, but I don't think he cared about the way it looked, and
I think you're right.
As we said, became a freaking like enthusiast dream to try and rebuild this thing. It's wild.
Mm-hmm.
So he played this guitar for years, and he had it on and off before it was eventually he retired it, and then at some point it was donated to the Smithsonian, and it was actually put on display at the Met in New York City last year. But back to the 80s, he quickly found out that his guitar was becoming just as famous as he was. And on a flight in 1981, he met a man by the name of Dennis Berardi, who was the founder of Kramer Guitars. Eddie and Dennis got to talking, and they came to an agreement that Eddie would make make an endorsement deal with the company.
Yeah, it's kind of it. Like Tony said, they met completely by chance on a plane, mm-hmm. and Dennis had just come across this new like style of tremolo called the Rockinger, which I guess he found from a small company in Germany recently. Mm-hmm. And so the whole thing was he like sold Eddie on this idea alone because Eddie was getting frustrated that his guitar would go out of tune. So Dennis told him, he was like, this technology will get rid of that problem. So they signed the deal and everything. But then I think it was only like a year before they ended up switching to the Floyd Rose because he hated the Rockinger.
Yeah, didn't like it. But he had a nice, pretty fruitful relationship with Kramer. I mean, they worked together for
a while.
9 years. And they made plenty of guitars for Eddie, the most famous of which was the Kramer 5150. And it basically looked just like the Frankenstrat, but the commercial version of it didn't have all the fun little holes and just the one working pickup and random wires and tape and everything on it. But you could still buy a guitar that looked like Eddie Van Halen's guitar. Eddie also switched out the neck on his Frankenstrat to the Kramer hockey puck head stock. That's the kind of that it became known for, and it had the Kramer head on it, and thus the Frankenstrat became the Franken Kramer.
This also really put Kramer on the map. During the meeting with the executives, Eddie was quoted as saying he would help make Kramer the number one guitar company in the world.
Oh, he did a pretty good job.
He did a pretty good job. I would say a fairly good job. I think before that, they were making guitars with aluminum necks.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were a very big name.
Not huge.
Yeah. I mean, they're still, even after this, they're still like way under Fender and Gibson. But like, you know, they held their own. They did all right for themselves during this time.
Yeah, they did okay. Yeah.
I'm sure that they were actually hugely popular during this time because of Eddie Van Halen. Mm-hmm. But it's all right. So yeah, the 5150 was made for Eddie, and then it was also sold commercially. And then they also made a double neck guitar for Eddie around this time. This was basically just called the the Kramer double neck. And it has a fun little feature. The only reason I'm even mentioning this is because it's got a, it's a double neck guitar. And then the top neck is actually a 12 string guitar, but six of the 12 strings were tuned from the bottom of the guitar. So it's actually on the body of the guitar. It's painted black and gold, kind of like the Bumblebee, but then it's got like the Van Halen logo in it. And it's just, I spent hours trying to figure out how this guitar worked. And eventually I figured out that the strings from the bottom just run up to the headstock, and then there's little holes that the strings go through, and it's a steel neck.
Bizarre. Sure. It's bizarre to look at.
Just, oh, I don't like it, but I love it.
Eddie had to make a guitar in true Eddie fashion. It's just super unorthodox.
Yeah.
Yeah, a guitar that looks as though it should be unplayable.
And the shreds on it. It's awesome.
Oh, he... Yeah.
So after,
doesn't phase him.
No, not even one bit. So after this, he got the Steinberger GL2T for a couple songs on the 5150 album, which is like a, it's supposed, it looks like a futuristic guitar, and it's got no headstock. You just tune it basically from the neck, and then it's very small and boxy. It looks like a, it looks like what people in the 80s thought that the 2000s were going to look like.
This is probably my least favorite look for guitars, because it's still a thing to this day. Hey, people love it, and I hate it because I'd like it a headstock.
It looks like those little travel guitar things. They don't, and it's not even just the headstock being gone. It's like the body is weird.
Yeah, it's just so small.
It's not pleasing to me.
It looks awkward in his hands. Like it looks like there needs to be more.
It's like the Uncanny Valley for guitars. Like it doesn't seem like it's in the guitar world, but apparently it had a pretty distinct sound. And so Eddie played it for a couple of songs on the album, brought it on tour with him, whatever. But in 1990, well, fucking ever, man. In 1990, he ended his time with Kramer and he joined up with Ernie Ball Music Man Guitars, and there he built the Eddie VH signature guitar, which looks like a fine guitar. They were already producing EVH strings, Eddie Van Halen strings, so this was a natural progression. And this one had a surprisingly simple like design on it. It basically just looked like it had like orange sand dune looking guitar. It wasn't the Frankenstrat paint job that he was basically known for at this point, which is wild. Yeah. And then after that, they also made him an Eddie VH double neck guitar, which, as the name implies, it's a double neck guitar. But unlike most double neck guitars in production, this one featured one six string guitar that was one neck. And then the second neck was actually a six string bass guitar, which is just fun because then he could play bass parts during the songs, which is just kind of fun.
Yeah, that's pretty
this
cool.
This is an odd move. Why would you ever play a bass guitar through an electric guitar amp?
Oh, he probably had pedals and shit to clean up exactly how he needed to. It's weird.
Just get an A-B switch.
But it's fun. It's a good time. Yeah, I mean, whatever. Yeah, it's fun. You know, when you're Eddie Van Halen, you can do whatever the hell you want. And people are just like, yeah, that makes sense. Like,
no one's going to say no.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he thought through that. I think he had that figured out already.
It's all up here, buddy.
He probably played it was playing his electric parts. And then he just like went up and played like doom, doom, doom. And then like went back to the, like he probably played it so little, but needed that double neck guitar. And boy, did he get it. Ba-dum, ba-dum, bum, bum. Yeah, I think that. Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. Boom. So he would leave Ernie Ball in 1995 because the company literally could not keep up with demand for the Eddie VH guitars, and so like they basically just had to get rid of them because like they were getting screwed up and pretty unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, but to be fair, like you got to know you're signing a deal with literally the most renowned guitarist of that time, and then pretty much like of all time, at least in contest for it.
Yeah.
And you're creating a signature guitar. I feel like this is a deal you don't sign unless you know you can deliver. I guess they didn't. But some people also think another factor was that he left because he had his eyes set on bigger and better.
Is that something?
Tony, tell him about it.
Oh, okay. You're just...
Tell him about it.
Okay. Yeah, in 1996,
Segway.
Eddie Van Halen joined with PV, where they worked with him until 2004. And through this, he got a guitar and an amp deal.
This is where the world was given the PV5150 amplifier, the workhorse of the metal world.
It's hell yeah.
Pretty standard. Like, one of the guitarists in my old band had a 5150, and the other guy had an EVH3. So, you know.
That's just insane.
You don't get a bad sound.
That is insane that, like, just a guitarist with no classical training, no electrical engineering training, he just got his name put on it and made the most famous things out there. Yeah. It's so nuts.
God. His guts are fucking nuts.
mentally insane, right? 5150.
Yeah, you got it.
Fucking crazy, dude.
You got it, man. While he was with PV, he built the PV EVH Wolfgang guitar, named after his son Wolfgang. I think that's kind of funny that he named him Wolfgang. Go with the Beethoven Wolfgang. Mm-hmm. You know that.
Keeping classic composers,
Not to give anything away, but it worked out for him pretty well. The guitar was again pretty standard. Didn't have the typical paint job again, but it did. He did add something to it called the D-Tuna, which was something that he himself came up with, and it allowed him to change the tuning of the low E string from a standard E tuning to a D tuning. It patented the device, and you can actually buy it now. And if you're looking at our Patreon video, I am circling it. It's the bottom picture, and it basically just allows you, like I said, to quickly tune it. You can do two different tunings and then swap them back and forth very easily.
That would have actually been super helpful to me when I had my Jackson, because that was the majority of my struggle. I'd go from E and I'd be like, I want to play some drop D stuff. And I'd be like, well, it's going to be about 30 minutes if I want to do that. So I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Well, Boney, you're in luck, because you can buy them right now for probably like $150, because I'm pretty sure you have to buy the whole bridge. But yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't freaking know. Whatever.
If you're not subscribed to our Patreon, look it up, because you can't see
it. Yeah. Suckers. So then in 2004, he teamed up with Charvel to make the EVH Art Series, which was basically looked like a more basic, cleaned up version of the Frankenstrat. Had the same paint job, and then it was in that Strat body style. It had three models to look like the original black and white Frankenstrat, the Bumblebee, and then the red black and white Frankenstrat V2.
It's just fan service at this point, you know, why not?
Merchandising.
Merchandising. Lunch boxes.
Van Halen the flamethrower. Van Halen the lunch box.
When I saw that line coming up, if you weren't gonna do it, if you were gonna do it in the accent, I was gonna end the episode right there. I was gonna do it.
It's over. I quit.
We would have cut feed.
So God bless you. Merchandising.
Merchandising.
So then in
the kids love this one.
So then in 2006, Fender took over production of the guitars and began producing faithful replicas of the Frankenstrat V2. It had it all. It had the fake pickups and wire. It had the bicycle reflectors, and it had a quarter on it, and they made sure to get a 1971 quarter every time. It was every collector's dream, and today goes for around $20,000 if you can somehow find one for sale. It had the look of the Frankenstrat, but it was actually built by an electrical engineer, and it worked really well. And that's something we haven't talked about, is while the Frankenstrat looked awesome, it was hugely problematic for Eddie when it was first built. He always had problems working with it, and so it sounded good when it worked, but it didn't always work because it was so jankily built, but also because he always tinkered with it. So but now here in 2006 you could actually buy a well done replica of it. I don't think that it had the Gibson pickups, as was
that's probably a safe bet.
You know,
it's probably a safe bet, Tony.
That is like a fanboy's wet dream though.
Like, even looking at it, even looking at it while I was doing the research, it's like, it just looks so, like, I just want it. And I don't play guitar.
I would just sit in my room, yeah, like in front of the mirror, and just like play. I'm like, I'm Eddie, dude. I'm fucking Eddie.
Yeah, as you just play like the single bar chord version of Smoke on the Water, like yeah, just the intro for fucking 6 hours. Yeah, that's great. Eddie Van Halen. So yeah,
that's me right now. So, right here.
27 years after Eddie made his iconic guitar a real Fender Frankenstrat Stratocaster was finally born. And I believe these were handcrafted by like one guy, mm-hmm, and I think there were only 300 made.
Yeah, they like went into all the details, like all the scratches that were on it and all every ding, like they mm-hmm put it all in there. And like Tony said, it was made by like an engineer, so it's a really good, it was a really well-made guitar, but it's pretty much just the ultimate collector's piece too.
Yeah, you're not going to find really anything better than this, mm-hmm, and more rare than this, but really minus the original built by Eddie himself.
Of course, naturally.
Naturally. And of course. And truth, and that's kind of it. That's the history of Eddie's guitars. And like, we didn't even mention all that he played. Like, we left out the Ibanez Destroyer, which if you're looking at Patreon, it's on the bottom of the screen. It looks like just Ibanez Destroyer, but it has a huge chunk cut out of it to look like a shark. That's why it has the name the shark. Which he didn't play for very long. There's the Dragon Snake, which was basically another version of the Destroyer, but he didn't like it, and so he took it to a furniture maker to have them carve out an image of a dragon biting a snake, which he never really played. He had the Rasta, which was a guitar that looked like a more refined Frankenstrat with a different paint job with a bunch of circles and stuff on it that he later painted to be green, white, red, and yellow. To be Rasta,
if you couldn't tell,
esque, and then he gave that guitar to Dweezil Zappa, who was Frank Zappa's son, and then like he had the mini SG, the Les Paul, the mini LS Paul, like he had so many guitars and he played so many guitars, and it was just, it's wild, man, it's wild.
Yeah, I find it funny though that he hired a furniture maker specifically just to reshape the Dragon Snake because he was bored with the original body and he just never played it. Like, what a bummer, because that thing is wild.
Oh, it's wicked.
I don't know if I'd say cool or awesome, but wild, that's like, the word I'd use.
He put like steel straps on the original one. I don't get it.
Oh, it's
on the shark, yeah, like keeping the big chunk together, you mean?
Yes.
All of his stuff is so freaking wild. Yeah, and if you look up the Dragon Snake, you can find like 6 photos of it. It's such a weirdly like eclectic hidden guitar in the world of Eddie Van Halen guitars.
But it was the cover of the guitar world and then just didn't use it.
Just disappeared. That was it. Like,
yep. He's like, actually, this is dumb as shit. What was I thinking?
Wait a second.
Oh, I was high. That's what happened.
He's like, I've never even swung a bow staff. What am I doing with those?
I don't even remember taking this picture or having someone hired to do it.
Costing $4,000 to have it carved. I don't know if that's good, but yeah, it's weird.
I think that's a little low.
Honestly, yeah, because it's detailed, man. Like we didn't even get to his brand EVH, which has guitars. It has his rendition of the Frankenstrat. It has amps, strings, cables, picks, tubes, pickups, humbuckers. It has straps. It has cases. The wide array of things that have the Frankenstrat paint job. Like you can go buy Van shoes with the Frankenstrat paint job right mm-hmm. now. And that's like a normal thing. It's just, oh my God, it's so wild.
You could want.
Yeah, it's got it. But like all these things, as well as of course the band Van Halen and all the deals they made, put Eddie's worth at a net worth in the ballpark of $100 million. And to prove just how in demand he and his stuff still is even today, on December 3rd an auction was held to sell celebrity memorabilia, and 3 of Eddie's guitars were sold. And I think that they were claimed to be like road used, but Wolfgang, his son, came out and said that they were not. They were basically just three random guitars that he had lying around. But the Kramer Frankenstrat, a copy of it, his Charvel Art Series guitar, and then the guitar that he used for Hot for Teacher were sold, and they went for $422,000.
I'm honestly a little surprised it's not higher than that, to be truthful, like, especially with the guitar that he actually used in the Hot for Teacher video. Like,
well, and to be even weirder, that one went for the least amount of money. That was the guitar and an outfit that he wore, the costume that he wore for the dance sequences, and that sold for $50,000. But like the other
ones are replicas.
Just guitars. They're just guitars. Like, I think he may have used them at some point, but they're just guitars, and they sold for like hundreds of grand. Yeah, it's weird. People eat it up.
Nothing makes sense.
People eat it up. And while he recently left us physically, his brand and his name will be with us for a long, long time. And people will always try to continue to recreate. And it's a hobby. It's a passion. It's an obsession. But they will always try to recreate the Frankenstrat for all the time. The most famous guitar of all time. I'm going to say it.
Yep.
People will,
I would agree. Say so.
People will try to figure it out for
I think that time. Is a safe claim to make.
Just go look up Johnny B guitars if you want to see just
seriously
how
to watch it.
I'm going
to
just how in depth people get on this because they
he
love
is a
it.
Groovy guy.
He literally
groovy
got into weather.
Talking about.
He literally got into the weather to tell us the day that he thought he might have painted it red. He got into history. Of the weather.
It was like a hearsay point that somebody said that he stayed home because it was raining. And he's like, well, I looked up the weather on the week of March, the last week in March of 1979. And it's wild. People look up all of that. And honestly, I don't think people have a definitive answer even on what type of wood the guitar is. So people are just making shit up as they go. And
I really don't think people know. I don't think he was telling people even when he was getting his own replicas and his own signatures.
Well,
I think
people, you could make the replicas out of pine and people would just be
exactly.
like, I'll just buy
well,
it.
I'm
like,
going to buy that. Keep the other shit close to the chest. No,
right. God bless him for it. So that's it. That's the history of Eddie Van Halen and his guitars, specifically the Frankenstrat and less specifically the rest of them. So we hope that you liked it. We will talk to you in a week for part two of Van Halen when they come out. We've got the series. David Lee Roth takes the old dookie as he hits the happy trail at the end of the episode.
So y'all, I'm editing it right now. It's thick. It's juicy. There's a lot in there.
It's dense, man. It is dense. So we will talk to you in a week. We hope that you enjoyed our series. If you want to go watch it as a video podcast, do that on our Patreon. Be safe out there. Be happy. Be friendly. And do something good. I helped someone push a car today with a dead car. So you guys do something nice as well.
Yeah.
I thought you said, I hope someone pushed a car today.
I helped someone push a dead car today.
That's good of you. You didn't even tell me.
No, I wasn't. Mad. Yeah. I don't tell you everything, Austin.
You tell me about your good deed.